Discover Ag podcast is brought to you by Case IH. Case IH has solutions for every challenge, equipment for every farm. Case IH is built by farmers.
You're listening to a 58 Ember production.
Good morning, Discovering Discos. This week, we discover a shocking change to potatoes that is the new polarizing food debate. Kylie Jenner's new foodie business and how the bird flu has officially hit U.S. dairies and what that means for milk supply.
Welcome to Discover Ag, where food news meets pop culture. We're your host, Natalie Antara, millennial cattle rancher and dairy farmer. And every Thursday, we go beyond the headlines to discover what's new in the world of food. And we are coming to you from Natalie's ranch in Nebraska.
Yay for Nebraska. You are here on my ranch with me.
I am. I'm not actually with you while recording the podcast because you are recording from your house and I'm recording from your office. But we are like just a hop, skip, and a jump away from each other.
Minor details. Listen, it's the closest we've ever recorded before, except for when we are.
Except for when we're actually together. It's so funny. I mean, I spend so much time with you. Like, we obviously are together a lot. We talk a lot, but I've never been to your house. I've never been to Nebraska. And it's just like so crazy to like be here in real life. I don't know. It's like just, I don't know. It's wild.
I was going to ask if it was weird, if it was different than we thought it'd be, if it like was like, was it weird?
No, it was not weird.
Were you like, this isn't what I thought it would be? Like, this isn't what I imagined?
No, I feel like I've seen, especially with the filming that we've done, like with film crews, I feel like I've seen enough of your house, like through a, you know, camera lens that I like pretty much knew what to expect. But overall, like the actual like ranch is exactly what I like expected it to look like.
So we were actually, the reason Tara is in Nebraska, although I wish it was just to visit me, we did have a speaking event earlier, actually recording this. So last week we were together down in Lincoln speaking, which was a lot of fun. We always enjoy speaking together too. So it was fun to kind of do that. I kept thinking the whole time we were together down there, normally we're, we fly in, we do kind of our business and then we leave. And I kept thinking, you know, we were going to go to our airports and leave like our normal to do. And I was like, you're going to come home with me. It was like the funnest surprise at the end of the weekend for me.
Yeah, it was really funny though, because on the way home, you started out driving and literally within like 45 minutes, I was like, do you want to drive?
Of course, you have to bring this up. You know, you took over so I could do work. That is why. Not because I was like a bad driver or anything. I don't like to drive either. So I would have happily let you drive the whole entire time.
So I did. Now we're enjoying the rest of the weekend. Well, I want to get to the rest of our weekend. So let's just dive into the articles.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay, diving into our first article to discover this week. Headline, does that potato count as a vegetable? ? The new polarizing food debate. So botanists count potatoes as a vegetable, but should Americans? The U.S. Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee has sparked the question, setting the table for a round of spud sparring among scientists, potato growers, potato lovers, and parents. And sometimes I just love when I read, usually I pull like the intro hook from, you know, something that was in the article it's written. And I love when writers get creative, like spud sparring. I was like, that's so fun.
I was thinking sparring. That too. I was like, I don't remember seeing that in the article, but it must have been in like the little tagline they give. Mm-hmm. But that is so cute. I know. I love a good pun.
Uh-huh. Very punny.
This off on the right start. So this is kind of a fascinating article. Honestly, when you picked it, I was kind of like a little bit wah-wah at first. I was just like, we're covering potatoes. But actually,
we're covering potatoes. It's like it has pizzazz to it now.
Yes, we're covering potatoes. I have a total change in appreciation for potatoes after researching this. But I think it was just interesting that like nobody's happy about this. Like the National Potato Council is not happy about this. The grain people are not happy about this. Like the only people who seem to think this is a good idea is the people doing the dietary guideline.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Two things. I had my own preconceived notion of where I thought the answer to this question lied before I went into the article. Totally. And I will say, one, I was swayed. There was some very convincing sound bites and information in a handful of the different articles that I believe something different now, which we'll get into kind of going through everything. But yeah, I didn't realize this is a thing. Like this is a hot potato, if you will. I was gonna say this is a hot topic, but this is a hot, we have a hot potato on our hands, you guys.
Okay, well, pass the hot potato to me. So one of the things about vegetables in the United States is the most consumed vegetables are potatoes and tomatoes. And that is because of French fries and pizza sauce, which is like not surprising at all. Americans actually down more than 50 pounds of potatoes over the course of a year and 31 pounds of tomatoes.
Yeah, we love our potatoes, which I could have guessed. I don't know if I would have put it as number one, but I would have guessed like Americans love our potatoes. And not only do we love them, the interesting thing is they're important. So this is a total side note, but I was reading an article about how we're actually getting close to releasing the first genetically edited potato in Latin America. And that in that article, they quoted that potato is the world's third most important crop for human consumption. And I had no idea. So not only do we love them, but they also kind of carry this like nutritional, I mean, we're going to use I think that's one of the things that's debated about this is that word nutrition. But there are certainly camps that believe in the nutritional components that a potato adds and the value to the diet.
So yeah, that's actually what the U.S. Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, that is a mouthful, is working on. They are, you know, representatives from like across like human health, nutrition, all these different things. And they're working on putting together the guidelines for 2025.
Yes. And I think that's why, you know, at first note, this actually comes off kind of like a lighthearted topic. But then when you think about the importance, I mean, we have talked about this before, about how decisions, policies, meetings, things like this dictate, you know, federal food programs, what's in schools, you know, hospital food. Like, that's where all of this comes for these decisions. And so when I got into it, well, I thought this was, and kind of like you, like, oh, this is, what are we covering? Potatoes. But then once you get into it, you're like, oh, yeah, there's so much significance over deciding where a potato fits, which seems so bizarre. But that's why people are kind of heated about it. Like, there's certainly, as you mentioned, one side that wants to pull them from the vegetable category. So they are considered like starchy vegetables and they want to move them to grains. And then there's the other side that's like arguing grains and starchy vegetables are completely different. Like, potatoes don't have a place in the grain component. They need to stay in the vegetable component.
Okay, so before I started like kind of like peeling back the layers of this.
Of this potato, peeling back the potato. Peeling the potato, look at our puns. Oh my gosh, just rolling off the tongue today, you guys.
Okay, but I feel like for this article, this is what I went into it thinking before we started researching it. I was kind of like, okay, this is hard for me. If you are eating a plain old potato, I'm like, it's a vegetable, 100%. Like, there is so many amazing things about potatoes as far as like nutrients, like vitamin C, potassium, calcium, vitamin B6.
Hold there, fiber. Hold that. Because did you know that? I didn't know that. All those things you just listed. I had no idea.
At some point recently, I feel like I learned that like, potatoes have gotten such a bad rap and they are actually a really, really good food. Like, in their whole food form, they're such a great food with tons and tons of like vitamins and minerals.
Yeah, I left feeling like, okay, I feel a lot better about our potatoes. Because like you said, yeah. I know where you're going to go with this and I'll let you go in there in a second. But there is a difference between the whole form and the processed form. And we actually eat a lot of potatoes in the whole form in our family. And I was kind of, I didn't ever feel guilty about it. But leaving this article, I was like, okay, great. I feel better about our choice to eat potatoes as often as we do as a family.
Yeah, I will say, I feel like now if I'm like, what side should we do? Should we do a like a more of a grain or should we do a baked potato? I feel like I'm going to maybe like kind of default to that whole baked potato with a little bit of like cheddar cheese on top, you know, and just like call it a win for a side. But that leads me to the next point. Most of the potatoes we are eating is obviously not a baked potato or, you know, just the raw form. We are eating a lot of like French fries, tater tots, just very overly like processed potatoes. And I'm not saying necessarily, you know, they're like bad for you or whatever, but obviously there is a line where it is just like a more processed food than a whole food. And so in my mind going to this article, I was like, okay, well, to me, a tater tot falls in like other carbs categories, not in vegetable category.
Yeah. So there was actually two great sound bites that kind of said what you were saying just in a, you know, elevated sound bite, more articulate way.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome. So I'm going to read those because I actually thought also the articles did a good job of getting sound bites from a lot of different people. So they had, you know, obviously I knew immediately like the potato council or the potato industry is going to be opposed to this change. So I knew there would be like a spokesman from them, but they brought in a dietitian, which I love to see. And they had different people like from both sides. I thought it was like a well done article from that aspect. And actually the dietitian and the representative for the potato industry both kind of had the same talking points. And so I'll read one of them. The dietitian said, potatoes can be super nutrient dense. and that the field of nutrition in general has a problem with vilifying foods. I don't think any public health person would say that people would benefit from eating fewer fried potatoes. It would be good to eat fewer of them, but I think that doesn't have anything to do with whether it's a vegetable or not. And that's kind of what the potato representative too, he said, basically agree with the food scientist saying Americans should consume more vegetables, you know, non-potato vegetables, but he doesn't think that recategorizing potatoes is the answer.
And I think that's ultimately where I ended up with this. Like, potato is not a grain. It should not be classified as grain. I'm like a firm believer that words matter, word choices matter. And obviously I'm in the dairy category where I think like the word milk matters, right? Like thinking about the nutrition profile of a plant-based milk versus whole milk, they're not the same. And so to use the same word to describe them, like kind of obviously like ruffles my feathers a little bit. But the same with potatoes, like it's not a grain. And then from like the consumer side, like I feel like there's enough confusion already about like what something is, what it's not. And now we're going to like make it more confusing by saying that a potato is in the grain category. Like it doesn't really make sense. Like getting into the kind of like gluten-free side of things. Can you imagine like being in a grocery store and thinking a potato is in the grain category? And then you're like, well, is it gluten-free? And I know that people might be like rolling their eyes, but I've seen milk cartons that say gluten-free on them. Like it's obviously like a consumer concern or confusion. And so this would just add to that even more.
Yeah. And I'm always against anything that adds to more consumer confusion. You know, that's like a little soapbox for me. Here was kind of my tipping point for sure. Cause my preconceived notion going into this was, I was like, I could see how potatoes should maybe, you know, be shuffled over a little bit. Then after reading like the, you know, everyone's viewpoints and the different nutritional facts and the different, you know, how a potato truly is different from a grain. Yes, a potato is different from a vegetable, but it's also different from a grain. Here's what swayed me for sure that it should stay in the vegetable category is they listed other types of starchy vegetables, and they include green peas, winter squash, sweet potatoes, yams, beans, and lentils. And I was like, if we're going to move potatoes over to grains, then we have to move all of the starchy vegetables over to grains. That's the only thing that would make sense to me. And I don't see like how a winter squash would be a grain. I don't see how green peas would be a grain. And so that's why I'm like, I don't think we can pick on potato. We got to stop picking on the potato. The potato's got to stay in the starchy vegetables, which goes under vegetables.
Yeah, the sentence for me that really did it was the comment that someone said, the suggestion to reclassify potatoes as a non-vegetable is not grounded in any scientific metric. And I was like, hard stop. Like, it's a vegetable. It's not a grain. So why are we talking about moving it?
Were there parts of this, like just talking about that with like the potatoes and the science, were there parts of this? I was reading sentences where it was like the testify, like the testimony around the potato. And I was like, this is blowing my mind right now that we were in court over this potato debate.
Yes and no. I'm not going to lie. There were parts of me that were like, no wonder we can't get anything passed through Congress because we are fighting about whether a potato is a vegetable or not. But at the exact same time, I know what a big deal this is because I wanted to say dairy has been fighting about whether dairy needs its own classification. So if you notice when I listed off the five categories, it was dairy, fruit, grains, protein, and vegetables. And there is obviously a very like strong case for some people that dairy should just be in the protein category and there should be four categories and dairy doesn't need its own category on the My Plate because that's what our current dietary guidelines are. It like looks like a plate. It's divided into four sections and then there's a glass of milk off to the side that says dairy. And so a lot of people think it should just be the plate and that dairy should be a part of that protein category. And so I do know how heated these debates become.
So I think the reason I stood so firm in covering this article, I did not let it down. I just kept moving it from top of mind is because I freaking love potatoes. I said that kind of earlier. I alluded to that, like for our family, a lot of times we'll have like roasted baby reds as a side with like a salad or like whatever. I feel like my go-to, like we don't actually eat a lot of pasta or grains in our house. I feel like my go-to is potatoes. I just love them. I love all forms of them. I love thinking about the different ways you can eat a potato. So I thought it would be fun. I actually looked up the top five most popular ways to order potatoes in the United States. And I thought it'd be fun to see if you can actually guess them in order.
Okay. All right. Let's do it.
So I'm not going to give you the five. I just want you to guess.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you want to start from five and work up to one or start with the most popular and work your way down?
I'll start with the most popular and work my way down.
Okay. That'll be easiest.
Okay. First up, French fries.
Yeah. Nailed it. I mean, obviously, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. That was, I feel like you got the hard one out of the way.
20%. You're 4/5 of the way there. 1/5, actually. Sorry.
Math is hard. But potatoes are easy. Okay, so the next one is tater tots.
Nope.
It's not even top five?
No, tater tots is not top five. I'm shocked. There's another one that is not top five that has me actually a little aghast.
Oh my gosh. Okay, okay, okay. I mean, baked potato.
No.
It's not top five?
Not top five. Can you believe that?
What are people doing to potatoes?
That's my number one favorite way to eat is a baked potato.
Oh, me too. I would rather have a baked potato than, I love french fries, but I really do love baked potatoes too.
I love a baked potato.
Oh, with so much butter, like it's almost equal parts butter and potato, a little bit of cheese.
Salt.
I personally like sour cream. I know that chives, that's like a hit or miss.
Bacon.
I'm not a big chives and bacon person, but I'll do it.
I mean, going back to what we just said about how people actually eat the potatoes, the problem, not the potato itself.
Yeah. All the things we just listed may be contributing problems.
Okay, do you want me to tell you the second one? I'll tell you the second one because you're not going to guess it.
No, I got to guess a little bit more. Okay,
it falls in the breakfast form.
Oh, hash browns.
Hash browns.
That makes so much sense. I totally was already on to lunch and dinner.
And I don't know if this is controversial or not, but I'm team no hash browns. I hate hash browns.
I can take them or leave them. I think it depends on the hash browns. Okay, number three. I feel like I wish I could phone a friend.
Mr. Potato Head.
Okay, I need a hint for number three. I'm so stumped. Scalloped potatoes. I'm starting to think of crazy potato things.
So three feels like it's cheating a little bit because it's an offset of french fries.
Oh, curly fries.
Waffle fries.
Oh, I'm surprised waffle fries is higher than curly fries. I have curly fries on the brain because Luke just picked me up Arby's and he got me curly fries because he obviously knows me well and knows that that's what I need. So, but waffle fries also, a good Chick-fil-A waffle fry, I mean, it smacks.
Yeah, I do. I think if I had to rank between the three, I would do, actually, that's really hard. I do love a waffle fry though, but waffle, I think I would do curly, then straight, I think.
Oh, really?
I think I would
do straight waffle curly.
Okay.
Okay. Number four.
Mm-hmm. This is a traditional, a good old traditional one.
Oh, mashed potatoes.
Mashed potatoes. Isn't there a song that's the mashed potatoes? I think there is. I'm 100% certain there is.
I'm out on that one.
Okay. And then the fifth one is a summer form.
Oh, potato salad.
Yes. Look on your face when it clicked. Oh my gosh, the distinct difference between your thought process and your light bulb moment was drastic there. Yes, potato salad is fifth. I love potato salad. Nothing says a good barbecue like a potato salad.
Any honorable mentions in the rest of the top 10 that we need to know about?
Yeah, I can read the top 10. Tater tots was six, baked potato was seven, potato skins was eight, home fries was nine, and loaded tater tots. Very specific. Loaded tater tots was 10.
That is a little cheating because you're home fries. There's four different french fry options there. There's two different tater tots. But I will say, I forgot about the potato skins. And potato skins, golly, those are good too.
Mm-hmm. I can't say tater tots and not think of Napoleon. So Napoleon Dynamite 100% branded themselves around tater tots. But in the closing of this article, in the namesake of potatoes, I want to end it on the words of Miss Dolly Parton. It was recently said on her TikTok to her millions of followers, quote, "Every diet I have ever fell off has been because of a potato. Potato, potato, potato. I have never met a spud I didn't like." Me either, Dolly.
To Dolly.
Me either.
So well said, Dolly. Attention all outdoor living and music loving discos. We have something we have to tell you about. It's Turtlebox speakers.
Turtlebox speakers is what your outdoor lifestyle is missing. Created by four adventurous friends, Turtlebox is on a mission to be the loudest, most rugged, portable speaker on the market. Our family got our first Turtlebox speaker 4 years ago, and since then, we have only acquired more. We absolutely love them.
They are durable, portable, and completely waterproof. But one of the coolest things about Turtlebox is that you can pair two speakers together to increase volume with a surround sound feel. On our recent trip to Moab, we put a speaker in each of the UTVs, and we were all able to enjoy the same music. The speakers also last for more than 20 hours on a single battery charge, so you don't have to worry about constantly charging them.
Whether you work in the outdoors or play in the outdoors, Turtlebox is the speaker for you. They come in a handful of different colors. I personally love the white and the new River Rock color. Shop them at turtleboxaudio.com. All right, diving into the second article to discover this week, headline, Keeping Up with Kylie Jenner's New Canned Cocktail Sprinter. The 26-year-old entrepreneur's line of canned vodka sodas, she makes her the latest celebrity to enter the red hot, ready to drink category.
Yeah, and this sprinter, as you mentioned, is actually vodka-based, so it's very different than what you'd think of a lot of the quote-unquote chick beers that are like a malted beverage. Hers is vodka-based, and it comes in four flavors, black cherry, peach, grapefruit, and lime.
I was excited to see this. Were you excited to see this? You were indifferent.
I feel like the whole like chick beer category is so funny to me, how we never had a girl, quote-unquote girl beer. I know there's lots of guys who like to drink these also. Nobody ever did them. Everyone said it was stupid. Like Truly was one of the first that did it. And now the category is just like exploded and everyone's making one. And I'm like, oh, yay. Now Kylie is too.
So I'm surprised. I think you'll guess why I'm excited in a second. But since you brought this up, we'll switch to this because I was going to ask if you were surprised to see this. And I was not surprised. I feel like one, their family has been trending towards like investing and making a namesake in kind of food and drink. We know her sister Kendall has, you know, the tequila 818. Kim Kardashian's been recently involved with like some hot sauce and stuff. So I just saw that trend for them personally. But I also feel like this is so typical for a celebrity. I actually wrote down a list of the different celebrities that have made alcohols. Michael Jordan, Blake Lively, Ryan Reynolds, Matthew McConaughey, George Clooney, Woody Harrelson. Like, I feel like it is a typical shift for a celebrity to somehow form some type of drink. And with Kendall doing what she does with tequila, I was like, it totally makes sense that Kylie would choose this path with the canned version.
Yeah. And sales in this category are up 26% year over year in 2023. So you're talking about insane growth. It is the fastest growing spirits category by revenue. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just exploding. I mean, I even think about like, you know, the trends of like ranch water, like what we've seen like Katie Beale Brown do with that product. Like there's so many things happening in this category. And I actually love to see it. Like, I do love these kind of drinks. Like, if I asked Daniel to make me a drink, he's going to like pop me open a can of Truly, which, side tangent, I'm going home to have a conversation with Daniel because last night Luke came in from working all day long at 8 o'clock at night and was like, I'm sitting on my butt on the couch. And Luke was like, can I make you a drink? And I literally was thinking he's going to hand me a Truly, crack open the can. Luke made me a whiskey sour. He like made it with egg whites and like squeezed a fresh lime or lemon, shook it up like a bartender. I was like, is this like a mixology class? Like, what did I just walk into?
Luke,
pour it for me.
Luke loves to host. He also loves to drink. So when he gets the chance to pair the two together, he gets excited. And his latest kick has been the whiskey sour. So I knew he was going to ask if he could make you one.
And I mean, I love whiskey, which he does know. And so I was like thrilled.
He gets a pat on the back for the host. I mean, I didn't do anything. I just sat there.
I mean, I didn't do anything either. The poor man literally had been working all day long and comes in and makes us drinks and then brought me lunch today, including my Diet Coke. I was like, I'm never leaving. I'm staying here forever. I'm moving in.
Cheers to Luke. We'll give him a pat on the back. Okay. So can you guess why I'm excited about this brand?
Yes, because one of the flavors is grapefruit.
No, you're already wrong.
Oh, just kidding.
Because I am so excited to dive into her branding and marketing. I cannot wait. I am salivating to see what she does. So the Instagram, I'm kind of surprised. The Instagram only has right around 70,000 followers right now. And there is a handful of posts. There's probably like 12 to 15 posts, but nothing major yet. No major campaigns have come out yet. Like, she's kind of just at the beginning of obviously launching and announcing this. I went to her website, again, minimal, no apparel, no about me. Like, I wanted a mission story. I wanted all this stuff. Like, when we covered Pink last week on the podcast and how she has her wine, when you go to that website, I mean, it is so well done. Pink is integrated everywhere. There's quotes, there's videos of her. I mean, it's like story told so beautifully. And then to go to Kylie Jenner's, it was so flat. And I know this is just the beginning because she won't leave it there. And I can't wait to see what she does.
So two things. I agree. I actually put in my notes that I was a little disappointed by the branding on the Instagram page. It felt like it was still in the rollout phase. And this is actually nationwide. It went live at the end of March. So you can get these anywhere. my next thing is, you say you think it will get ramped up. Part of me thinks it won't. And I am so far off. And I know Kylie is like the marketing queen. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm well aware of the businesswoman that she is. But part of me thinks she's just going to like roll this off of the back of her like 4 million followers, or what is it? 400 million followers. Sorry, I forgot a couple zeros there.
just a few.
Just two. 400. I feel like she's just going to like launch it off of that, because when you go to her Instagram page, there is quite, I mean, it's not like fantastic branding again, but like she has a lot of posts about it, especially for her, because I feel like she doesn't, I don't know. Her Instagram page is really interesting. And so I just was like, is this all we're going to get out of it, or are we going to see more?
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm like associating her too much closely to what like Kendall has done with her 818 tequila, but Kendall has, I feel like I read an article recently talking about how Kendall's excited to like get into like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like influencer events and like different things this year with marketing and branding. So maybe I just have high hopes that I can like sit back and analyze how these two roll out their brands. But I don't know. You know, I mean, Kylie did keep like her pregnancy secret her entire pregnancy. So maybe she isn't going to be as like integrated in this brand as I'm like hoping she will be.
I know. So going to the actual like liquor, I will say I'm not surprised that it is, you know, quote unquote, real juice, no sugar added, gluten free, fruit forward, like all of the mm-hmm. buzzwords you could think of were like packed into this like marketing. If anyone's curious, peach is Kylie's favorite flavor.
No, I don't know if anyone's curious.
I don't know. Some people might. I'm joking.
She did state peach is her favorite.
I wonder if it's the hottest selling one. I'd be so curious if, because she said that, if it is like flying off the shelves more.
100%. She probably's never even had peach. She's like, eeny, meeny, miny, peach.
She's like, I like the color.
I did love, one thing that is obviously like rolled out for it around the branding is the tagline and the slogan. And they're running with your new main squeeze. The website says, made with premium vodka and real fruit juice. Sprinter is your plus one for fun, your can for every plan. And I thought that was good fun. Like for her, probably followers, if she is going to just roll this off the back of her 400 million Instagram followers, that's just insane to think about for one. I feel like that hits probably the people that are following her. Like your main squeeze, your can, you know, plus one for fun, your can for every plan. Like I feel like she hit it.
I love her taglines. I didn't love Sprinter. I didn't totally get
that's
that
what I
name.
Wanted. I wanted to know why she picked Sprinter. I'm so confused mm-hmm. by it. Not confused by it, but it's not my favorite either, but I guarantee there's a reason or a meaning or something, and I want to know what it is. Listen, also, didn't she like name her baby something and then also rename it something else?
Yeah, maybe she changed her baby's name at some point. I don't follow the Kardashians, Jenner's like very closely, so I don't know how many kids she has, but I do remember there being like a name controversy. Like, wasn't the name Air or something, and then they changed it to something else?
Or like Wolf. I thought it was like Wolf.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, those feel like kind of the same to me somehow.
Same but different.
But like the same but different, right? Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, there's just, it's like an out there name.
So do you think if you see this in grocery stores, you'll grab it?
So that's what I was going to say. I think maybe I would try it, because I do, like, I really like cracking open a can. I don't drink like traditional beer at all. Like, I have tried, trust me, I have a cousin who makes beer. I have tried every beer flavor that you can think of, and I just cannot find a beer I like. But I do love cracking open a can. So I'm a pretty big like malted beverage girl. So I would definitely try these. But I have read, I don't know this, that they're pretty pricey, which does not surprise me at all. Some of those like girl beers, I swear there's girl tax on them. And they are so expensive.
Yeah, I agree. I will probably pick up the pack to experience it, test trial it for the discos, give you guys our feedback, pay the hefty price. But I probably, unless I love it, but you know me, I'm not a big drinker anyway. So I doubt it'll be like something that becomes my new go-to.
When you crawl into bed at the end of a long day, there is nothing better than getting into soft, luxurious sheets. That's why Natalie and I are sleeping on Cozy Earth sheets.
Cozy Earth crafts luxury goods that transform your lifestyle. They have been featured on Oprah's Favorite Things 5 years in a row. They are worth the cost. You guys, not 5 minutes into sharing on my social media that I was trying out the Cozy Earth bedding, I received a DM saying, quote, "Oh my gosh, your life will be forever changed. Only sheets we will ever buy."
Beyond just the sheets and bedding, Cozy Earth also has loungewear that comes in a variety of styles and colors. I've actually had a pair of their pajamas for more than 5 years, and I wear them nonstop. They still look so amazing and feel great.
All Cozy Earth products come with a 10-year warranty, and Cozy Earth was kind enough to provide an exclusive offer for you guys, our discos. If you go to www.cozyearth.com and use code DISCOVER, you can save up to 35% off site-wide.
So one more time, that's www.cozyearth.com and use code DISCOVER to get 35% off site-wide.
Okay, before we dive into our last and final article, I do want to give a shout out for Club Discover, our once weekly email newsletter. It comes out on Mondays. And you guys, we share our favorite discoveries for that week with you there. So we're obviously biased, but we love Club Discover. It's such a fun way for us to connect with the discos in a way outside of this podcast that's definitely more personal than what you get here every Thursday with us around the food news. And we are actually getting ready to release a special Mother's Day newsletter with all our favorite picks for Mother's Day. We'll do one for Father's Day too. But with Mother's Day coming up in May, we thought it would be fun. So if you are looking for ideas for a special female in your life, head to the show notes and sign up for Club Discover. All right, getting to our last and final article to discover. Headline, bird flu has hit U.S. dairy cattle for the first time. Here's what it means for milk supply. So if you guys have missed it, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Food and Drug Administration, as well as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that is always such a mouthful, I can see why we have acronyms, have confirmed the spread of the bird flu, saying they tested sick cattle from dairy farms in Kansas and Texas, which makes it the first time that bird flu has been found in dairy cattle. This is everywhere. Tara and I are seeing it a lot of different places, you know, online print, a lot of news articles around it, also on social. And I think I speak for both of us when I say this is kind of similar to when we covered like the fires in Texas. I know this is like something that is, it's not just an article for you. It's like a very emotional article for you, being with it in dairy.
Yeah, for obvious reasons. I mean, it's like hitting close to home for me, like both, it's hitting close to home because it's in the dairy industry. And then like physically, it's having obviously an impact in New Mexico. So hitting close to home for me. I do want to get into the history and all of that. But I think for a lot of people, like the number one thing that comes to mind is really, and obviously food safety, like is the food safe? That's probably the number one question I'm getting in my DM. And so I think the biggest thing that I want people to know is that pasteurized milk is safe. Like you do not need to worry about pasteurized milk. I want that like so stressed. USDA officials said pasteurization has continually proven to inactivate bacteria and viruses. So you do not need to worry about like milk supply system.
Yeah, I thought there were so many great sound bites about the concern for commercial milk and the supply safety. I think, you know, it's interesting in situations like this, you know, I mean, even you and I have been talking this off the air, like what is the best way for an industry to talk about this, come out about this, right? Like the PR, the marketing, and obviously always in hindsight 2020, you can look back and say like, should we have done things differently? Would it have been better to come to the public and do, you know, X, Y, and Z instead? And I do think they have done a really good job addressing like the safety concern, like you said, that is probably on the forefront of so many people's minds when they're shopping.
Yeah, I mean, it always like stresses me out to cover things like this, because if people haven't heard about it, I don't want to make them worried. But then like, I think at some point, so many people are talking about this and so many people have questions that I want people to know that they can like come to us and we're going to tell them exactly what's going on. As far as the milk goes, I think there's something else I want like people to know is that as always, when a cow is sick, like this is no different with, you know, this virus or any other thing. Like if a cow just gets a, you know, regular old sick, is those cows are pulled out of the milking herd. In our dairy, like a sick cow would go into what we call a quote unquote hospital pen. That's just what we call it. Lots of other dairies call it that as well. And the milk from those cows does not enter the food supply system. Like it is being discarded. And that is the same with this. Like milk is only coming from healthy cows that's ending up in our food supply system.
This is something I have learned from you through our many conversations about food together on this podcast and then always when we guest on other podcasts. You know, I was fairly familiar with like the checks and balances in place for like the beef industry, just because obviously that's where I spend my time and, you know, my expertise is more. And I have learned so much about the hefty checks and balances that are in the dairy industry.
Yeah, it's really insane. It's actually something Daniel and I were talking a lot about over the last few weeks is I think there's like, I don't know, there people have like weird ideas about our food system. And one of the things that's so crazy to me is like for milk quality has absolutely never been higher than what it is now. Like we are really truly like doing incredible things to like deliver the highest quality of milk. Like when I get questions about like why are expiration dates so long, I'm like some of it goes back to the fact the milk is just really high quality. And so I just want people to know they can feel good about that, that there is like not a concern with like, you know, pasteurized milk on the shelf at the grocery store. But now maybe we should get into the history a little bit so I can kick it off and then kind of you can jump in.
That sounds great.
The first cases of this, which is called H5N1 bird flu strand, emerged in North America among wild migratory birds in late 2021. And then it did spread to poultry. From there, though, now it is obviously showing up in dairy cows. And as of just last week, one major egg producer, which is actually just down the road from me as well, have confirmed cases. And then one person, as of recording this episode, that had close contact with a sick dairy cow did get pink eye.
So I feel a little bit silly when I recognize this timeline and like kind of how this progressed. I feel like I've like heard bird flu before, obviously, but I didn't connect that it like was the same strain moving through. And that's how it kind of had moved through from like the birds to the poultry to the dairy. And I don't know if that makes me part of everyone or not, but I'm so curious. I feel like this obviously came very forefront for me because of you being in the dairy industry. Has this been as popular in the news when it was hitting poultry in the fall? Did I just miss it because like I'm not so connected to like a poultry farmer that I wasn't talking about it? Or do you think there's something with mass media right now where this is getting bigger and bigger because it's spreading more and more?
I think both. I remember when bird flu was going on because, and we'll get into this, but with bird flu, when it affects poultry, they have to like euthanize all of the birds. And so I remember that making news. And maybe it was like my ag bubble where it was making news. I think it was probably in mainstream media, but I don't know if it was like as widespread as it is this time around. And we're going to get into this more later. There's like a lot to cover in this article. So, you know, bear with us as we take you through kind of all the steps. But I keep getting so many fear-mongering things that are like, it's an election year. Of course, this is like making mainstream news. Like, of course, things are happening. And so there is some really crazy rumors, conspiracy theories that are already ramping up when it comes to this.
It is crazy how conspiratory the food category, I guess.
Yeah.
Can be like people have really, and again, we've talked about this so many times, like food is important to us nutritionally and emotionally. Like we are just so heavily tied to food that I could see how we would care about it so much. But people sometimes say the wildest things about the food supply, food industry, like just about food in general that I like have, like obviously it's online that I have to like check myself a little bit, but I just feel like I see the most outlandish things sometimes about people and their view and concern about food.
I know. I do want to dive into that later, but going back to kind of what the timeline, I guess, looked like this spring, it seems like it first started on dairies, maybe in West Texas is what has kind of been confirmed in February. I'll say my first, when I started first becoming more concerned about this was actually when we were in Moab. Like we got a call.
You're like, great, we're on vacation. Of course, something is going to.
I was like, are you kidding me? And we're about to not have cell service. But there was like, you know, rumors going around that it could potentially like be in our area. Like obviously I'm in Eastern New Mexico. So it is not far from West Texas. Right now at this recording, it is confirmed in Texas, Kansas, New Mexico, Michigan, Idaho, and Ohio. And there are some other states that are suspected that could possibly be, you know, affected as well. I mean, something to keep in mind, I feel like, is like dairy farmers are obviously working really closely with their veterinarians, their state officials, their federal officials, like USDA is involved. All the state agencies are involved. FDA is involved. Like there is so many people that are like really, really closely watching this and like assisting dairy farmers.
I know. So that is one thing I actually want to say is that obviously a lot of focus has been on like dairies, dairy farmers, but man, the veterinarians right now that are involved with this, gosh, my hat goes off to you because obviously you and I have talked so much about like the stress as a dairy farmer, but I can't imagine the stress as a veterinarian being involved with this.
Yeah, I just feel like anytime something like this happens, like, you know, you're going to turn to your vet, obviously, right? And so, but I will say, I've been like so proud of the entire dairy industry with like communication and talking with each other, like even dairy farmer to dairy farmer, like people just like being so proactive and talking with each other, like, what are you seeing? What's going on? Like, what are you doing? What is helping?
Okay, so maybe can we talk about that? What are they doing on dairies right now to treat this? Like, where are we at?
Yeah, I think for me, I kept kind of like relating it back to my kids, though, when they have a virus where the doctor is like, it's a virus. It has to run its course. Make sure your kid is drinking water and is like hydrated and lots of fluids and like rest. And like, I mean, that's kind of what it was, right? Like keeping a really close eye on the cows. You know, we always joke that our husbands can spot a sick cow like 200 yards out. And so, you know, spotting those sick cows, pulling them again from the herd into a separate pen, you know, giving them fluids, because the biggest symptoms and things were that cows would kind of, you know, they would act sick. They wouldn't eat as much. They wouldn't drink as much water. They'd like, you know, their ears were droopy. Their eyes looked tired, like exactly what you think of like when a person is sick. And then for dairy cows, obviously one of the big indicators as well is that when the cows have the virus, they will drop off in milk production. So they won't produce as much milk.
Okay. So on that note, you just said milk production. And I feel like, you know, again, being a little bit more removed from this, I think the first thing a lot of people are, like you said, is concerned about the safety thing. And then I think a lot of people's minds go to like supply issues. Like, is this going to affect milk in the grocery store? Are prices going to go up? Are we going to have it? Like, I don't know. I think we should talk about that.
I don't think it'll affect milk supply because one of the things about spring, which is it's actually, if there was a time of year for this to be happening, I feel like spring maybe was the time. Like temperatures are warming up.
Yeah, so I was actually reading or heard that this, there is hope too, because this is, what did they call it? They called it that it's labile and that it can't survive heat very well. And so that was like a good thing coming down the pipeline, that temperatures are changing for this, you know, to kind of like help dampen this like spread of the virus or like severity of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like when the virus goes through your house, you like open the doors and windows, right? Like get fresh air in, like let the sunlight in. And so, yeah, as temperatures are warming up, I think that's going to be a huge improvement. As far as the milk supply thing that goes, though, is cows produce more milk when the days start getting longer. It's just like, I mean, chickens, if you have backyard chickens, you know this, that they'll start producing more eggs whenever, you know, the days start getting longer. And it's really similar with dairy cows. So a lot of times in the spring, we actually have an oversupply of milk just because of what's called spring flush. So there probably will be not a lot of change in supply. I'm curious about the pricing because, as we know, anytime something is like uncertain or there's like fluctuations, like it'll change prices. For some people, like we're already seeing like some prices like decrease on some things and other, you know, so it's impossible to know how this will play out. But as far as the actual supply goes, like we will have plenty of dairy products and like milk for the shelves. Like that's not something people need to worry
about.
Good,
because we don't want to be sacrificing, you know, our cheeses and our yogurts and our ice creams.
Yeah, as we discussed, we are not giving up cheese on our baked potatoes. Yeah. So, you know, keep the supply coming, people.
Yeah, my baked potato needs topped. So if we could figure out this bird flu, Natalie would appreciate it. Thank you.
Leave it to us to try to keep it light, even on a heavy topic. But maybe on that note, we want to get into some of like the other animals that it's affecting.
Well, that's what I mean. When you first text me about this and I kind of became aware of it, Luke and I were talking like, oh, is it hitting beef industry? Because obviously down in your guys's area, it's like prevalent for dairy, but you guys have a lot of big like feedlots too, right? So it is, you know, Texas is cattle country as well. And so, you know, selfishly, first thing that comes to mind for me is like, oh no, like, will we be seeing this in the beef industry? And like, what does this mean, you know, for us? And then, like you said, yeah, like, where does this go next? I mean, I think it was found in goats. It's hit like seals. But there was another weird animal.
Yep, I got them. I got the list here. So let me tell you, I'll answer your beef question first. It's polar
bears. Polar bear. That's what I knew. I'm like, what polar is bears. The other weird big animal that it's been in? Polar bears.
The poor polar bears, they just get like beat up out there. No, so beef cows, you're right. We're in like, you know, I'm currently in Nebraska, in the beef capital of the world, but I'm going to argue that like West Texas is also the second beef capital of the world. Like we have huge ranches, feedlots, all of those things too. And so far they are just not seeing any correlation in beef cow at all. Like it is primarily, I mean, it is in dairy cattle.
Luke did say though, well, it obviously hasn't affected like beef like the beef animal, we're seeing it in like our market prices, which is always interesting as well too, like how one industry can affect another in that manner, especially beef and dairy.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But some of the animals that it has been affecting, you said polar bears. It is also affecting the sea lions. We mentioned like poultry, but it, you know, now recently has also affected like egg laying hens. And so that was in one of the counties, like just down the road from me in Texas, that a large egg supplier was impacted. And then some people are saying that it's impacting cats as well. So it's kind of, I don't know, in a few different species. I feel like there's not a lot of like rhyme or reason to it. Like I'm like polar bears and sea lions and then dairy cows.
Well, mammalian for sure. I think the one though that stands out to me the most, I don't know, interesting is the right word, but probably the one that people are most concerned about is its recent spread to humans, right?
Yeah. So I said this at the very beginning of the episode, but we'll kind of like close out with that. There is one confirmed case in humans, and it is someone that had very close contact with a sick dairy cow. So they were actually like, it seems like treating the dairy cows. But I will say the person's symptoms are really mild, like not to like downplay that. But the person had pink eye. So very mild symptoms.
I should have checked your eyes before you came here from New Mexico. I should have, you know, done a thorough scan, quarantined you, sent you out to the barn, made you sleep there.
Thanks a lot, Natalie. But I do want to say USDA says that bird flu spread to human, the risk is extremely low. So I just think people should not panic is probably the one thing to take away from this.
Yeah, which I know is like easier said than done, right? Things like this are big issues and, you know, concerning, especially when they're so foreign to us, right? For a lot of us, this feels very like unknown territory. But yeah, I mean, living our life in panic state is not good for ourselves either, especially when it's not something that we necessarily need to, you know, spend time panicking over. Like I have a lot of other things on my list right now that I should be paying attention to.
That you are currently panicking over. Yeah, definitely. Well, on that note, I think it's probably, you know, as always, I would love to hear what the discos think. What are you guys' other questions? You know, drop into the DMs over on our Instagram page and let us know what you're seeing, what you're hearing, and what questions you guys have, because we do truly love to hear from you guys. It broadens the conversation so much and brings in so many different perspectives. So drop your comments there. And with that, we will see you guys next week.
This has been a 58 Ember production. For more shows, please visit the 58 Ember channel, 58ember.com, or find us at 58 Ember Media on socials.